Chapter 17. The door opened, and two men dragged Giordino into the room, dropping him roughly onto the floor. Pitt caught his breath. Al was in pitiful shape. His mangled feet hadn't been treated. There wasn't the least sign of disinfectant or bandages on them. Blood from a gash above his left eye had hardened, gluing his eye half shut, leaving an appalling, malevolent expression that burned with the fires of unadulterated defiance.
"Well now, Major Pitt," Delphi said reproachfully. "Nothing to say to your boyhood friend?"
"No."
"Perhaps you have forgotten his name.
Does Albert Giordino ring a bell?"
"You know his name?"
"Of course. Does that surprise you?"
"Not really," Pitt said easily.
"I imagine Oral Chanana supplied you with a complete rundown on Giordino and myself." For one long moment, the towering hulk behind the desk didn't get it. Then Pitt's words began to sink in, and Delphi lifted an interrogatory eyebrow.
"Captain Chanana?"
His voice was rock steady, but Pitt detected a very slight touch of doubt.
"You're fishing in the wrong current. You have nothing to..."
"Cut the theatrics," Pitt sharply interrupted. "Chanana may have collected his captain's pay from the United States Navy, but he played ball on your team. A nice setup. An informer sitting on the top level of your opposition. You knew what the 101st Fleet's operational plans were before they were set down on paper. How did you recruit Chanana, Delphi? Money? Or was it blackmail? Judging from your track record, I'd say blackmail."
"You're very observant."
"Not really. An easy scent to pick up. The good captain had outlived his usefulness as a stool pigeon. He couldn't live with the role of traitor any longer. Chanana began cracking. He was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Add his little illicit affair with Adrian Hunter, and poor Chanana had to be eliminated before he spilled your organization. But you bungled his murder, Delphi. You bungled it beyond comprehension." Delphi looked at Pitt in bleak suspicion.
"You're guessing."
"No guesswork," Pitt said. "It was a chance meeting between us in the Royal Hawaiian Hotel bar that followed your plan. Chanana was waiting for Adrian Hunter when I wandered in the door. He, of course, had no idea I was another one of Adrian's playmates. But he couldn't run the risk of an embarrassing introduction. A rendezvous with an admiral's daughter, 20 years his junior, in a dark corner of a bar might conjure up any number of nasty visions. So he ducked out before she showed up. Then, when Summer stepped on stage for the assassination, she mistook me for Chanana."
"And why not?"
"I fit the description. Neither Chanana nor I had worn our uniforms that night, and to top it off, I was conveniently drinking with Miss Hunter. There was no doubt in Summer's mind. She took care of Adrian and then lured me onto the beach where she tried to pump me full of poison. It was only after she found herself in my apartment that it began to dawn on her that she'd made a terrible mistake. My first hint came when she addressed me as captain. And later, you yourself supplied the clincher when you admitted to having an informant. Two and two went together. The answer was Chanana. All in all, very elementary."
"Yes, you're a weird breed of cat, Delphi. What other man would have sent his own flesh and blood out in the dead of night to commit murder? Hardly the father of the year. Even your hired help wander around like robots. What's your trick, Delphi? You sprinkle mind-deadening drugs in their cornflakes, or do you mesmerize them with those phony yellow eyes?"
Delphi looked unsure. Pitt wasn't acting like a man who'd come to the end of his string.
"You push too far."
Delphi leaned forward and locked a hypnotic gaze on Pitt's eyes. Pitt's deep green eyes never hesitated, meeting Delphi's stare with burning intensity. "Don't strain yourself, Delphi. I'm not the least impressed. As I've said, they're phony. Yellow contact lenses, nothing more. You can't cast a spell over a man who's laughing at you. You're a fraud from top to bottom. Lavella and Robleman. Who are you trying to kid? You're not fit to wipe their blackboards. Hell, you can't even do a decent impression of Frederick Moran." Pitt broke off abruptly, dodging to the side as Delphi, clenched teeth bared in rage, leapt from behind the desk and swung in a wide windmilling arc with his fist. The blow carried every ounce of Delphi's immense strength, but the blinding haze of anger blurred his timing and the fist soared past without making a connection. He stumbled, recovered, and then lost his balance, going down on his hands and knees with a grunt of agony as Pitt's foot caught him on the side of his body. He stayed where he was, swaying from side to side. There was a moment of stunned silence throughout the room as Delphi rose unsteadily, supporting himself on the top of the heavy desk.
His breath was coming in gasps, his mouth a taut white line. Pitt stood frozen, cursing himself for overplaying his hand. There was no doubt in his mind, there could be no doubt in the mind of all who were in the room, that Delphi meant to kill him and Al. Delphi reached behind the desk, pulling open a drawer and lifting out a gun. Not one of the projectile pistols, but an automatic, Pitt noticed uneasily. A heavy, dark blue 44 Colt revolver. Hardly the gun he expected Delphi to wield. Unhurriedly, Delphi broke the gun open, checked the shells, and snapped it shut again. The yellow eyes hadn't yet changed. They were as expressionless and icy as ever. Pitt turned and looked down at Giordino, who met his eyes with a wry grin. They tensed their bodies, waiting for the end. But Delphi's yellow eyes strayed over his targets toward the door. "No, father," Summer implored, "not that way." She stood at the door, wearing a green robe that came to mid-thigh, her beautifully tanned and smooth skin radiating warmth and self-assurance. Pitt's blood began to pump rapidly through his veins. She moved into the room, her eyes touching Delphi with a confident, challenging gaze. "Do not interfere," Delphi whispered. "This matter does not concern you."
"You just can't shoot them down here," Summer persisted. "You just can't."
Her great gray eyes suddenly became soft and pleading.
"Not within these walls."
"Their blood can be washed away."
"It's no good, father. You've had to kill to maintain our sanctuary, but that was outside in the sea. You must not bring death into your own house."
Delphi hesitated and slowly dropped the gun. "You're quite right, daughter," he smiled. "Death from a bullet is too quick, too merciful, and too unclean. We'll set them free on the surface. We'll give them a chance to survive." "Fat chance," Pitt growled. "Hundreds of miles to the nearest land, man-eaters waiting for a bite of human flesh, you're all heart. Enough of this morbid talk." The giant's face wore a sardonic expression. "I still wish to hear how you came to be here, and I haven't time for any more of your wit." Pitt casually studied his watch. "About 31 minutes, to be exact."
31 minutes?
"Yes, that's when your precious sanctuary caves in."
"Back with the jokes again, are we, my friend?"
He walked over to the portal, staring at the moray eel, before turning abruptly. "How many other men were in your aircraft?" Pitt snapped another question back. "What became of Lavella, Robleman, and Moran?"
"You persist in toying with me."
"No, I'm dead serious," Pitt said. "You answer a couple of questions, and I'll tell you what you want to know, my word." Delphi thoughtfully looked at the gun. Then he laid it on the desk.
"I believe you. To begin with, Major, my name really is Moran."
"Frederick Moran would have to be in his 80s to be alive now."
"I am his son," Delphi said slowly. "I was a young man when he set out with Dr. Lavella and Dr. Robleman to find the lost island of Cannoli. You see, my father was a pacifist. After the Second World War had ended in the inferno of the atomic bomb, he knew it would only be a question of time before mankind destroyed itself in a nuclear holocaust. When countries arm for war, the arms never go unused, he once said. He began researching areas that would be safe from radiation and far from target sectors, eventually discovering that a base under the sea provided the ideal retreat. When the island of Cannoli sank into the sea many centuries ago, it dropped suddenly, without volcanic activity or major cataclysm. This indicated that the ceremonial caves and tunnels recorded in the legends might still be intact. Lavella and Robleman sympathized with my father. They joined him in his search for the lost isle. After nearly 3 months of sounding the seafloor, they found it, and immediately began plans for pumping the passages dry. It took them nearly a year before they were able to set up quarters within the seamount.
How was it possible to work so long in secret? Pitt asked. The records list the expedition's ship as missing only a few months after it left port.
Secrecy was no great problem, Delphi continued. The ship's hull had been modified so that divers and equipment would be able to pass in and out of the sea. A few alterations, like changing the name on the bow and painting the superstructure, and the ship simply became another unnoticed steamer plying the western trade route. Not secrecy, but financing became the major problem.
The rest I know, Pitt said with an unnerving degree of certainty. Delphi looked up. Summer took a step forward, the identical expression of doubt showing in their faces. How odd you didn't catch on to the fact that the entire 101st Fleet, the entire Navy Department, discovered your setup.
What purpose do you serve by lying? Delphi demanded.
You should have guessed, Delphi. Remember when you left my apartment? I mentioned cannoli, yet you hardly batted an eye. Probably because you knew I was about to die, so my little revelation was of no consequence.
How could you?
The curator at the Bishop Museum. He remembered your father. But that was only the beginning. The pieces are all there, Delphi, and they all neatly finish the puzzle. Pitt walked over and knelt down beside Giordino. Then he faced Delphi again. You kill because of greed, nothing else. You've even embedded the same cold-blooded philosophy in your own daughter. Your father might have been a pacifist, but what Dr. Moran began for strictly scientific and humanitarian reasons unwittingly became, in your hands, the slickest hijack operation in maritime history.
Don't stop, Delphi said grimly. I want to hear it all.
You want to hear it told from the other side? Pitt asked, his tone neutral. Want to hear how you're put down in the files?
Very well.
Before continuing, however, I'd appreciate it if you could make Giordino here a bit more comfortable. It's embarrassing for him to have to lie on the floor like an animal. Delphi nodded reluctantly to the guards, who lifted Giordino by the arms and carried him to the red-cushioned couch. Only when Giordino was sitting more comfortably did Pitt continue. The next few minutes wouldn't make much sense unless he could guess enough of the plot behind Delphi's strange organization. If they were to have even one chance in 100 of escaping the crush of the coming explosion, he'd have to get Giordino and Summer out of that room. The great crystal port would be the first to go, unleashing a million gallons of seawater. He could only pray for an interruption. He took a deep breath, hoping his imagination was operating in high gear, and began. The Explorer, your father's ship, had outlived her usefulness by the time the scientists had made the seamount livable. Dr. Moran needed money to buy equipment in order to continue underwater construction. So he resorted to the world's most common con game, taking an insurance company. Screwing the establishment out of a few bucks in the name of science consoled his conscience. And what the hell did he care? He and Lavella and Robelman had dropped out of society anyway. So he sailed the Explorer to the States, loaded the holds with worthless junk, insured the ship and cargo to the hilt, all this under a different name and registry, of course. Then he sailed the ship back to Cannoli, where he opened the Seacocks and became the first victim of the Vortex. He immediately applied for the insurance. The scheme worked so smoothly, Delphi, that you couldn't resist opening up for business in a big way after the good scientists died off and could offer no objections. Only this time you refined the operation. You used chips that didn't belong to you. There was more loot in this method, as you weren't out the original cost of the ship. It must have been one hell of a profitable scheme, and still is, for that matter. It's almost ridiculously simple. You arrange for a few of your men to sign on as crew members on a merchantman heading west from the mainland to the Indies and the Orient. Why always west? The western steamer lanes cut right over your backyard. And not only does cannoli lie near its path, but goods stamped made in the USA are easier to sell in the backwater black markets. All your clandestine crew had to do was deviate the ship a few degrees off its course, signal all stop to the engine room, and then stand by while you and your merry band of pirates climbed aboard and murdered the loyal crew. No trace of the vessel is ever found. How could it be? The bodies were weighted and dumped over the side, the hull was repainted from stem to stern, a few prominent areas of its superstructure were altered, and presto, you had a new ship. Then it was only the small matter of selling the cargo. Unless it was easily traceable and too hot to handle, in which case it was expediently dropped in the sea. You made a few honest trade runs under a new registry before you then reinsured it, and then you sunk it on the summit of the seamount so you could always get at the remains for spare parts needed to make phony modifications on future acquisitions to your ill-gotten fleet. God, how all the buccaneers of the Spanish Main would have envied your organization, Delphi. Next to you, they were nothing but a gang of muggers. Why, hell, you've got half the world fooled into thinking there's almost 30 ships out there on the bottom, when in reality there's only half that many. Every one of them was listed as missing twice, once under their original name and again when you scuttled them under yours.
Very penetrating. The scoff in Delphi's tone was belied by the deep absorption in his eyes.
The Lily Marlene, Pitt went on in a quiet voice. That was a clever hoax. Things were getting a little too hot around the Seamount. Too many private pleasure crafts cruising about, trying to treasure hunt the missing ships. It was only a matter of time before a fathometer or sonar picked up the outline of the hulks. So you cooked up the Lily Marlene affair to get the heat off your operation. The Coast Guard, the Navy, the Merchant Marine were all taken in by the eerie discovery on board the yacht. You'd make a great press agent, Delphi. That description of the dead bodies with green skin and burned faces put the fear of the unknown into every superstitious seaman sailing the Pacific. Ships and crews began avoiding these parts like the plague. You had them all conned. No one considered the notion of a trumped-up facade. You sent that phony message from the Lily Marlene's radio. The operator was already dead. The crew of the Spanish freighter, the San Gabriel, had murdered him and everyone on the yacht. Pitt paused to let his words sink in. That was a neat touch, having the Lily Marlene blow herself and the boarding crew to shreds. In reality, there was no explosion. The yacht had been captured and sailed away to the Seamount for a complete facelift. She was too pretty a ship to scuttle. You've probably got her tied up this minute at one of the Honolulu yacht marinas under a new name and registered to the same outfit, on paper at any rate, that owns your other ships. What's the name again, the Pisces Pacific Corporation? Delphi suddenly stiffened. You know about Pisces Pacific? Doesn't everybody? Pitt asked. I can easily inform you that everything you own outside the Seamount is under custody at this moment. Your amphibian aircraft, corporation offices, the radio transmitter on Maui, to mention a few. Pitt realized that his imagination had hit home. You've had a good thing going, Delphi. Every contingency was covered. Even if one of your victims managed to get off a Mayday signal, your transmitter on the island effectively garbled it and then rebroadcast a confused message that just happened to mention the ship's position, a position over 100 miles away from where the actual act of piracy actually took place. Delphi's face was a mask of malevolence. You should have died, Pitt. You should have died in triplicate. Ah, yes, Pitt shrugged. The slimy crud in the gray panel truck, for one. A damnably crude attempt for someone of your finesse. But I suppose you were pressed for time, especially since Chinana had informed you that I was placed on duty with Admiral Hunter and his staff that morning. After the botched job by Summer the night before, it would have been awkward if I'd launched an investigation of my own. Or worse yet, if Adrian Hunter let slip a few choice remarks about her affair with Chinana. It all totaled to one conclusion. Pitt had to get flushed and fast. You're a cunning man, Delphi said slowly. Far more cunning than I gave you credit for. But it makes little difference now. You've played a bluffing game. Your guesswork is fairly accurate. You missed target on my father, however. He was a good man. He and his fellow scientists were all killed when a pump failed, and they drowned in a flood tunnel shortly before their work was finished. Credit for the missing ships belongs only to me. I planned and conceived the entire operation beginning with the Explorer. I made mistakes, but none that couldn't be glossed over. Yes, Mr. Pitt, you are bluffing. Captain Chinana kept me informed right up until his unfortunate passing. Admiral Hunter could not possibly have put the entire story together in the last 24 hours. Delphi passed his hand over his brow and rubbed his closed eyes. It was as though he was trying to erase a past error. You were my most inexcusable mistake. 3 decades of perfect isolation, and you nearly destroyed it. 30 years is a long time to get away with so awesome a crime, said Pitt. You destroyed yourself, Delphi. You bit off more than you can chew. Your worst blunder was capturing the Starbuck. It's one thing to hijack a merchant vessel or pleasure boat. The Coast Guard seldom conducts any more than a surface search in the area of the last known position of the missing ship. But when a naval vessel vanishes, the Navy never stops scouring the sea, no matter how far or how deep, until they find the remains. Delphi stared out the portal for a long moment. If Commander Dupree had only kept on his original course, instead of deviating and discovering our sanctuary, he and his crew would still be alive. Pitt's eyes were like round chunks of ice. How did you do it? How did you capture a nuclear submarine while it was underwater? Really quite simple, Delphi answered. My men stretched heavy steel cable in the sub's path, snagging the propellers.
When she drifted to a stop, we forced open several of her outside ballast vents, allowing water to enter her air tanks while flooding two interior compartments. As the Starbuck sank to the bottom, its low-frequency radio signals were jammed, and the escape hatches were sealed from the outside. Months later, when the food stocks ran out and the crew were weakened by starvation, my people entered and disposed of them. "Really quite simple," Pitt repeated grimly. "The Starbuck was the greatest prize of the century, the crowning zenith of criminal plunder. And you were home free. The Navy was searching hundreds of miles away. It took only a few days to clean out the flooded compartments, and there sat the Starbuck as good as new in only 90 feet of water. Except you had a problem, Delphi. I couldn't figure it at first. It didn't make sense. Here you have the world's most advanced nuclear submarine, including her missiles complete with warheads, sitting a few hundred yards from your doorstep, and you never moved her as much as an inch because you didn't know how to operate her. The Starbuck is a highly complex piece of machinery. After your father and the other scientists were killed, you were the only one left with any smattering of intelligence. Your entire organization is built on blind obedience to you. None of your people have 1 ounce of smarts. That's why you let Seaman Ferris live, hoping he could be tortured into training your men to at least deliver the Starbuck to a Russian or Chinese port where she could be sold. But Ferris's mind was gone. The ordeal of watching his crewmates and officers either die or disappear until he was the only one left was too much. He snapped. He'll never fully recover. A minor miscalculation, Delphi said tiredly. What happened to the André Viborg, Delphi? Did the Russians decide there was no honor among thieves and make a try at hijacking the Starbuck for themselves? This time you are quite wrong, Major Pitt. Delphi delicately massaged the spot where Pitt had kicked him. The captain of the André Viborg had his suspicions aroused when your ship, the Martha Ann, tarried too long in one spot. He came to investigate. I had no choice but to eliminate him as I had the others. It must have broken your heart to lose the Martha Ann, Pitt said acidly. She spoiled your record by being the first and only victim to have gotten away. Unfortunately, our losses in capturing the ship were quite heavy, Delphi said. The Martha Ann was activated to return to Pearl Harbor before my men could take the necessary steps to stop her. You could have blown her out of the water. Too late. Captain Chinana warned us of a new crew that was already flying from the islands to take command. We only had time to remove our dead and wounded. Nothing seems to go right for you, does it? Pitt said conversationally. You were on the Martha Ann, Delphi said coldly. It was you who shot down my men and spirited away the ship's crew in the helicopter. It has always been you who has corrupted my plans. Get screwed, Pitt said viciously. You invited me to the party, remember? I didn't ask to find that phony message capsule. Delphi bared his teeth. Why did you come here? He demanded. What exactly is your mission? To rescue Adrian Hunter, Pitt snapped back. You lie, Delphi shouted. Suit yourself. Delphi's eyes widened. Suddenly he knew. He hit Pitt across the face savagely, and Pitt stumbled back against the wall, tasting the blood in his mouth. The submarine, Delphi said in a quiet, toneless voice. You found the Starbuck operable, killed my men, and escaped with Ferris. Now you've returned with a crew to reclaim it. As I promised, Pitt said, nothing less than the truth. You're right, Delphi. I brought a crew of Navy submariners with me to salvage the Starbuck. While we've been standing here discussing the sins of your criminal acts, the sub has been raised off the bottom. Pitt studied his watch. It was 11 minutes to 0500. I should put her about 25 miles south by now. How the fortunes of war swing from side to side, Pitt said quietly. But it shouldn't come as a surprise, really. You couldn't be fool enough to think you could get away with it forever. In 11 minutes, the missile cruiser Monitor is going to fire a small nuclear warhead on the center of your precious seamount. In 11 minutes, we all die. Nothing can crush these walls, Delphi said calmly. Look around you, Major. The base of this seamount is granite, a hard quartz-type granite. It's stronger than reinforced concrete. Pitt shook his head. One crack. All it takes is one crack, and thousands of tons of water will come bursting through these caverns with 10 times the pressure of a fire hose. Everyone will be crushed from the water's force before they have a chance to drown. "You're overly inventive," Delphi said. "Anyway, no missile will be fired as long as you, Captain Giordino, and Miss Hunter are here." "Don't bet on it. The decision came from Washington, not Admiral Hunter. You underestimate Hunter. He won't plead for our lives against orders. Besides, he probably thinks Giordino and I are already dead. As for Adrian, no one will know until it's all over that his daughter was accidentally killed during a naval operation to destroy the Pacific Vortex. The man has an overabundance of guts. He won't hesitate to sacrifice Adrian's life to put your operation out of business." The calmness slowly faded from the giant's gaunt face, leaving it frozen in uncertainty. "Words. Nothing but words. You can prove nothing." Pitt decided to throw out his last card. With 10 minutes to go, it was now or never. "I can give you absolute proof that what I've told you is gospel. Check with your radio facility. You'll find that your transmitter on Maui is in the hands of the United States Marines. You will also discover that Admiral Hunter has been trying to reach you for the last 20 minutes to negotiate your surrender." Delphi suddenly started laughing, malevolently, angrily. "You fool!" he managed to gasp between uproars. "You stupid fool! Your desperate bluff has failed. You weren't as smart as you thought. You couldn't have known, could you? The transmitting station on Maui is no longer mine. I sold it out lock, stock, and barrel to the Russians 6 weeks ago. I haven't been monitoring your transmissions. The Russians have. The Soviet Navy paid dearly to own a radio facility so close to the United States Naval Headquarters of the Pacific. And by monitoring the 101st Fleet's messages, they hope to find the Starbucks whereabouts. A masterful deception, don't you agree, Major? They had no idea they were dealing with the organization that had already claimed the submarine." He looked at Pitt vengefully. "If you're waiting for a last-minute reprieve, my dear Pitt, you're wasting your time. There will be no communication from Admiral Hunter. There will be no offer of surrender. There will be no atomic missile for the qualified reason that I am leaving the Seamount. Its purpose has ended. Tomorrow I will begin moving my organization to a new location. My communication equipment here has already been dismantled, and without that, there can be no contact with Pearl Harbor or any place else, for that matter." Pitt didn't answer. He simply stood in place, wondering if the next 10 minutes would be his last. "And that's only the half of it," Delphi sneered. "You put the Starbuck 20 miles south of here, indeed. How much practice does it take to inject so much conviction into your face when you spout so many lies?" He laughed out loud. "You were right about one thing, Pitt. I could not operate the submarine with a non-experienced crew. But I did figure out her ballast system. At this moment, every air tank is empty. Yet there she still sits embedded on the bottom. Nothing short of a major salvage operation will pull the hull free. Months of resting in the same place has built up a suction beyond what her blown ballast is capable of breaking." "Yes, a pity. Your crew of submariners are as good as dead, if they're not already dead, by the hands of 7 of my best men. I knew your Navy wouldn't give up so easily. I knew they'd be back for another try at reclaiming their precious submarine, so I left my most trusted men on board, men who love to kill. Against them, I wouldn't give your engineering crew 1 chance in 10,000. Pitt tried to leap at Delphi, to ram his fist into the teeth under the yellow eyes. But one of the guards quickly shot him, grazing him in the left shoulder. He crashed sideways into a wall where he slowly slid onto the stone floor. Summer gave a half-retching, half-choking scream. Her eyes showed white around large gray irises. She made a move to go to Pitt, then looked hesitantly at her father. He shook his head and she shrank back in humble obedience. Giordino had not moved. He stared impassively at Pitt, but Pitt caught a warning millimetric nod of the head. "You've won a battle," Pitt hissed through clenched teeth, "but you haven't won the war." "Wrong again, Major Pitt. I win. Up and down the line I win. The Starbuck was heaven sent. As soon as I can transact her, shall we say, transfer of ownership, I can close out my venture here in the Pacific and retire to less taxing enterprises. I'm sure the new owners will take great delight in the Hyperion missiles." "Nuclear blackmail," Pitt spat thickly. "You're crazy." "Nuclear blackmail? Come, come, Major. How common of you. That's for fictional spy novels. I have no intention of blackmailing the superpowers over the threat of a nuclear holocaust. My motives are strictly for profit. In spite of what you might think, I have no stomach for murdering women and children needlessly. A man, that's different. K
Killing a man is the same as killing an animal. There's no tinge of remorse afterward. Pitt pushed himself upright against the wall. No one knows that better than you. No, Delphi continued. My plan is much more subtle, ingenious in its simplicity. I have arranged to sell the Starbuck and her weapons system to one of the Arab oil countries. Which one makes little difference. All that matters is that they are willing to pay a healthy price without haggling. You're crazy, Pitt repeated. Totally, hopelessly sick in the head. But Delphi didn't look or act crazy. Everything he said seemed logical. Any one of the rich Arab oil nations would make the ideal buyer. We shall know soon enough, won't we? He walked over to the intercom receiver and spoke. Prepare my mini-sub. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Then he turned back to Pitt. A personal inspection trip to the Starbuck. I'll give the survivors of your crew, if there are any, your regards. You're wasting your time, Pitt said bitterly. I think not, Delphi replied contemptuously. The submarine sits where I left her. The Navy will never give the Starbuck up. They'll destroy her first. By this time tomorrow, they will have no say in the matter. An Arab salvage fleet will be here to raise the hull. These are international waters. Your Navy would never attack another nation over a derelict and be condemned by every country in the world for instigating an act of war. Their only prayer is a deal with the Arabs for the return of the sub. By then I shall have my finder's fee, £300 million, deposited to a Swiss bank, and be on my way. You will never leave this seamount, Pitt said, his face twisted in cold hate. In 8 minutes you will die. Delphi's eyes caught Pitt's. So? I'm going to die, am I? He turned as if he were ignoring an insect and moved to the door. Then he looked back. Then I shall at least have the satisfaction of knowing you died first. He nodded to the guards. Throw them into the sea. No last consideration for the condemned? Pitt asked. None whatsoever, Delphi said with a satanic grin. Goodbye again, Major Pitt. Thank you for a most entertaining diversion. The sound of his footsteps died away, and there was only silence. It was 5 minutes before 0500.